This is episode 45 of The Living Reminders with Mary and Blake.
The sudden departure
was you.
Uh-huh.
Why?
Because I could.
You're gonna have to do better than that.
No, I don't.
You do.
Why?
Because there has to be a reason.
Why?
Everything in my life I've done for a reason.
Why?
To help people, to guide them, to ease their suffering, even though I suffered myself. I sacrificed my happiness. I let my family abandon me.
Why?
For you!
Everything you've done because you thought I was watching. Because you thought I was judging. But I wasn't. I'm not. You've never done anything for me. You did it for yourself.
From Cranston, Rhode Island, welcome to The Living Reminders. It's a podcast dedicated to the leftovers on HBO. We're still here and so you, so let's talk about its mad world.
Suddenly I'm hidden. It's the darkness of the dawn. And your friends are gone. And your friends won't come. So show me where you fit.
Hi, everybody. I'm your host, Mary Larson.
And is this my friend?
What's your name?
Reese.
And do you like lions?
No, sharks.
Oh, good thing.
Well,
good thing.
My name's Blake. And, you know, I can't believe I'm saying this in front of my son, who's sitting here while we're podcasting.
Don't say anything bad.
But I never thought I'd, you know, ever see a show about a lion sex cult. Reese, don't say lion sex cult, okay?
Blake.
I told him not to say it. But I'm glad I have now because, you know what? Just check it off the bucket list.
No.
Just check it off the bucket list.
No.
I hope my son doesn't go into school tomorrow saying
stop,
lion sex
stop.
Cult.
Stop.
Oh,
so
boy.
That episode.
Bananas.
B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
Yes, I was waiting for you to do that, and I had my finger on the button.
On what?
On the Maryism button.
That's Gwen Stefani.
Hoping that you wouldn't say it correctly. Sorry.
Oh. So anyway, the episode was something else. What would your Damon rating be out of 1 out of 5 Damons?
Oh, well, all right. I'm going to give this one 4.4 Damons. And the reason why I'm giving it 4.4 Damons is I liked it better than the Kevin Sr. episode. I was a little harsh on that episode, I'm not going to lie. But I liked it better than that. But I did not like it better than Nora's episode, and I did not like it better than the premiere. And those were 4.5s for me. And it was not a 5 Damon episode, in my opinion. So it has to go in the 4.4 range. See, I set the level. And now I got to stick by it. You know, it's my take. I got to stick by the take. And the reason why it's 4.4 is because it's a fine episode unto itself. It's brilliant. It's wonderfully written, wonderfully directed.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like it was like a vignette almost.
Okay.
Or in the music terms, it would be a concerto. You know, it was just a mini concerto unto itself.
I love how you need to use the consonants when you say concerto.
Wait, concerto. All right, how's that sound?
More like you.
It's a concerto. And the reason why that is the way that it is, it's because it's a separate story unto itself. And it does fit within the framework of the season that we have so far. It makes sense. You have to find out how they get to Australia, what happens. And it is a great story for Matt itself. It caps off what I think is a mini play for Matt for the entire 3 seasons mm-hmm. of The Leftovers. It shows his journey, his personal journey. We'll get into that later. But coming off of episode 4, which was 5 Damons for me,
Yes.
Like, we had, the momentum was there. We were like, boom, we're in it. And now we are ready to get this world going. And then we're on a boat with a lion sex club. And while it's great and I loved watching it, I just felt like, I felt like a little bit of a deflation.
Oh.
Do you know what I mean? A deflation in the Daemons. I mean, a deflation in the in the Daemons, yes, but a deflation in the season.
Okay.
And that's why it is 4.4. Again, good episode, very good episode, I think. Just in the grand scheme, it felt like, okay, we're coming off of this wonderful 5 Daemon episode, and now, here we go. So how about you, my darling? What are you giving it?
I'm giving it a 5.
5 Daemons.
It's the 5th episode. I'm giving it a 5 because it took me on a wild ride that I never knew I was ever going to see, ever. Now I can't unsee all those things that I saw
like
last night.
Like a lion sex cult.
Yeah, that was, holy smokes, interesting. So, you know, I'm giving it a 5. I loved the music. It was really odd, different music that they were able to use. Like, you know, this is just, the writers just, and whoever is choosing this music, they're just having so much fun leaving these extra Easter eggs to be like, here, what do you think this is going to mean? Are you going to Google what this song was? Are you going to learn more about it? Because they drop so much in other different ways. So yeah, I'm giving it a 5. I'm probably going to be giving it 5s here on out. I think that we needed a break after the intensity of plot that happened last week. Remember, this is like right when the roller coaster has reached its peak.
Right. Yep.
And now we're going to start looking down. Okay, then now is when it starts to pick up speed and it's going to keep rolling. So I think we needed a little weird break.
Okay, you know what? That actually makes sense to me because, you know, episode 4 was like, okay, we are at the top. And you know how at the top you have that one moment of like respite and you can see the bottom and you know what's coming.
Yeah.
But you have that one little moment of like,
it's a pause almost. It's like your whole body pauses.
Okay. All right. And with that said, episode 5 is that pause. It's that.
Yes.
Okay. All right. They're on the way to Australia. It's going downhill from here. Things get strange.
You know what was funny is we were corrected last week for calling it Melbourne, that people actually in Australia call it Melbourne.
Yep.
And everyone today, or on last night's episode, they called it Melbourne. So maybe that's just how us Americans say it. And we all say
like
Melbourne.
Said, I'm from Boston. I say things how I want to say them. That's just how it goes.
Yes.
Like Concerto.
Oh, my God. God bless you. All right. So our friends on Facebook, Christina Brown says that she absolutely loved it, kept her eyes glued to the screen, seeing that David Burton is the guy on the bridge and the karaoke MC just further fuels my choice that this is all a spiritual journey for these people. She gives it 4.75 and... Hold on, I'm going to pause. For all of you who are like, hold up, my brain, what, David Burton? We're going to recap. Okay. Christina gives it 4.75 Daemons, 4.5 for the story, and she deducted 2.25 for the lack of Kevin Jr., but added 0.25 for the naked running man.
I love the breakdown. Thank you, Christina.
Yeah.
Sean Mullins on Facebook says, I would give the entire episode 3.5 Daemons, but the ending... 11 Daemons.
That ending.
That's like, that's serious freaking, that's almost 108 Daemon territory, and that's saying something. That's the guy I was telling you about. Oh my God, I laughed so friggin' hard. So 3 years ago, this guy is rock climbing in Perth and dies, then comes back to life in a cave. Did this happen the same time that Kevin died and Senior was in Perth? Perhaps that's why he was there with Kevin as the karaoke host and the man on the bridge. So many connections that have not been connected yet.
Yep. I'm feeling it.
Angie Graves Lee on Facebook says, I will freely admit that Matt is the main character I am least invested in on this show. So maybe that's why this episode left me cold. He finally seemed to accept that his faith doesn't keep him immune from bad things in life, and that is fine. But with only 4 episodes left, it's way too much time devoted to him. Even the, hey, look, it's the bridge karaoke guy, didn't redeem it for me. So, 2 whole Daemons.
Don't you worry. It's coming back, my friend. It's coming back. Yay!
Let's play Figure Out That Title. All right, Marvin. This is your segment. This is your time to shine. This was first, a hard one.
At first, I thought it was going to be, ooh, baby, baby, it's a wild world. And then I was like, they added like formats. So, okay, it's a bad world. It's a mad world. I'm feeling mad because it's close to Matt. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I had no clue.
You know what?
Yeah.
I'm very proud of you for admitting that.
Oh, I always admit my faults.
Good job. Well, I will tell you that there is logic behind this title.
There always is.
And back in 1963, there was a movie called It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. And essentially, it was a comedy. After a long prison sentence, this guy, Smiler Grogan, he was headed at high speed.
His name was Smiler?
His name was Smiler.
Ooh.
And has a bunch of famous people and whatever. And he was heading at high speed to a California park where he hid $350,000 from a job, a bank heist that he did 15 years previously. But he accidentally careens over a cliff in view of four cars whose occupants go down to help. And the dying Grogan gives details of where the money is buried. And when the witnesses fail to agree on sharing the cash, a crazy chase develops across the state.
Oh.
And one of the main characters at the end of the film, he loses everything. And he's like, "There are all the people that were chasing the money ended up in the hospital at the end." So, spoiler alert. And none of them had the money because the money was eventually lost. It fell and it went to the wind, you know, like they let go of it. And he thinks, my whole life is over. He loses everything. He loses his wife, his loses his daughter, he loses his job, he loses everything. He's like,
sounds like someone else I know named Matt.
I know. And at the end, he says, I don't know if there's anything that's going to make me laugh ever again, because technically this movie was a comedy.
Oh.
And one of the nurses and the people that were busting his balls the whole movie slips on a banana peel and then everybody laughs. And even including him. So it's like it's a test of faith and what comes out of life. And so there is technically a reason for this.
There always
title.
Is a reason for
yes,
their
title.
Yes,
there is. And that is that. So it was a movie.
Yes.
You ready to reheat those leftovers?
Yes, I am.
All right, let's do it. It's time to reheat the leftovers. All right. The details on this one. It was written by Lila Biok, or Biok. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. And if you're listening, Lila, I apologize. Please correct me if I'm wrong. And of course, it was written by one Damon Lindelof himself. And Lila has written a couple of episodes of that show, Manhattan, and also was a story editor on Don't Be Ridiculous and The Book of Kevin. Now, I know. All of you amazing people. Like, again, last episode we established I couldn't say nerds anymore. So I'm going to say amazing.
Correct.
That was your suggestion. A lot of you amazing people out there.
Amazing.
Are going to be asking, well, what the heck is a story editor? What does a story editor do? And like last episode, we talked about teleplay and the difference between teleplay and writing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the story editor is a job title in motion and pictures and television production. It's also sometimes called the supervising producer. And a story editor is a member of the screenwriting staff who edits stories for screenplays. The story editor, although, has many responsibilities, including finding new script breakdown writers, developing stories with writers, and ensuring that scripts are suitable for production.
So, like, how big of a deal are they in the writer's room?
Well,
are they kind of like the leader, like the captain?
They're there to, like, for the writers to bounce ideas off and to help, like, explore those ideas, make them bigger, make them grander, or make them smaller, and get to the point of the story.
So they're like their TA. You know, I'm going to help you reach your full potential.
Right. So that's that. It was directed by Nicole Castle, who has directed many great shows, including The Americans.
Love that show.
Love The Americans. Better Call Saul, also great. The Killing. The Following, which was actually not that. It was actually kind of a terrible show with Kevin Bacon.
Well, just,
and James
Purefoy. Yes.
You remember that show?
Yes.
Rectify, another bad show, Vinyl. And also directed another episode of The Leftovers. You want to know what it was?
Which one?
No Room at the Inn. It was Matt's second Matt-centric episode.
She's a Matt person.
She has Matt's number, I suppose. And the song was, this was a traditional Hebrew prayer of the Ashri or the Ashrei. I apologize if I get that wrong, which is about the justness and fairness of God. It was by a guy named Benzion Miller. And the Ashray is about three concepts. And
so this is the opening song, they're changing it every single episode,
right,
to like the magical, sparkly people disappearing.
So you're led to believe, because you heard that pinging from the submarine throughout the whole prayer.
Yes.
You're led to believe that this was the French guy who did the whole yoga, naked yoga thing.
That toe.
Praying.
Was so strong. Watch out for that toe. It can break your neck.
And essentially the concepts are, number one, people are happy when they're close to God. Number two, God cares about the poor and the oppressed. And three, God rewards good behavior and punishes evil.
Okay.
So that's that.
All right.
Those are the details there, kiddo.
Okay. So, this episode was crazy. Talking about toe yoga right there.
The F's account the Leftovers had, like, I know we said this for the Nora episode,
mm-hmm,
but the F's account that Leftovers has is far beyond overdraft now. It's like, they're just like, we're going to do whatever the hell we want.
Yeah, we're on HBO, and this is our final season, so we don't care who we offend or shock. We're just going to go there. And that's what they did. And now we have to talk about it. So we're going to be very careful because we're on Facebook Live.
So let's just talk about how crazy this episode was.
Okay. So there's this guy, Sean Collins on Vulture.
Yes.
And he wrote pretty much like the most amazing little paragraph. So I'm going to read it as if I was Sean. He said, okay, so here it goes. On this week's episode of The Leftovers, a French naval officer strips naked, blasts old music to a full volume to attract the attention of his captain, murders the man, steals his nuclear launch key, seals himself in the missile launch control room of the submarine, and then fires a nuke at an uninhibited island in the South Pacific. So that's all what happened in the midst of naked yoga with very strong toes. Okay, with commercial flights grounded following the explosion, a quartet of our heroes led by Reverend Matthew Jameson board a relief plane and head to Tasmania with the Tasmania. What am I making up? I'm making up a word.
Tasmania?
I don't know. Tasmania with the Tasmanian devil. I just made it up. It says it right here. Anyway, they head to Tasmania, where they board a boat to travel to Melbourne, aka Melbourne, to rescue Kevin Garvey so he can resume his duties as the Messiah. This boat happens to be, just so happens to be, the venture for a massive lion-themed orgy. Those of you who are tuning in who didn't watch this episode, that's right, don't clean your ears. I said lion-themed orgy. One of the guests is a former Olympic bronze medal decathlete who rose from the dead after breaking his neck 3 years ago and now believes that he is God. If he looks familiar, that's because he appeared in the hallucinatory afterlife purgatory where Kevin went when he died and he came back from the dead. So this God guy with the red hat, he murders a guy by just simply tossing him overboard in the middle of this orgy party. And Matt is the only witness and no one really believes him. And he also apparently is dying. We've been talking about this, how we think he has cancer again. So Matt confronts this God guy twice. First, he gets punched in the gut. Ugh. Then he gets mad and he decides to get an axe and he knocks this guy out with the axe handle, holds him prisoner until half convinced he's got the real deal in his hands. Like there's this moment where he's like, oh, I totally think you are God. Maybe he's just too delirious. He frees the deity in exchange for being saved from his illness. The cure doesn't seem to take. Literally all the guy does is snap his fingers. And when the boat finally docks, police arrive to arrest this God character because they ended up finding a fishing boat found the floating corpse, which confirmed Matt's story. In all of this confusion, a splinter faction of the lion orgy frees the actual live lion brought on board as the guest of honor. Oh. The lion promptly kills and eats this God figure as he attempts to flee. Matt turns from the scene toward the camera, looks at his friends and says, "That's the guy I was telling you about." The end.
That is absolutely bonkers. Like I know when the trailer came out and on the social media, on Facebook and Twitter, we said like, oh my God, this trailer is bonkers. But I literally have no words for what we just saw. And it's not a bad thing. It's just, I never anticipated something like this ever.
Like, no.
Especially when there's so little, I keep using this term all season, but there's so little real estate to go around, and now we're having a Lion sex cult party.
I am sad that I shared this on Facebook already.
It's like, what's the Eyes Wide Shut? It was Eyes Wide Shut with lions who talk, you know, like
the lion didn't talk.
No, never mind. It was the joke from Harry Potter. Can't believe you didn't get that.
Oh,
you're a wizard, Harry.
Yes. Unbelievable. Anyway, what did you
Rumble Roar?
All right, well, let's just get this out of the way right away, because I think this is kind of a hot button topic for a lot of people.
Okay, I'm ready.
The sex party. What did you think of the sex party? Was it necessary? Do you think it aided the story? Is it something that was useful to you?
I don't know if I would particularly say it was useful to me.
Well, it could be useful to some people. You never know.
Oh my gosh.
Is it gratuitous like Game of Thrones, or is it even more gratuitous like it was in Westworld? Or does it make sense?
It made sense to me. Okay, so I'm like a sheltered person, in case you guys can't tell. I'm a little like goody two-shoes a little bit. But we have seen different cults of people. We've seen very different reactions of people. We have heard even Damon talk about how in times of crazy confusion and earth-shattering events that people like turn to different religions and create different cults. Mm-hmm. So I totally know that there are like underground people with fetishes and weird things, and I 100% was not surprised to see this.
Okay.
Because it put a totally different spin on how people might be reacting to things and things that people might be celebrating. Is it something I would do? No. But do I believe that there are probably orgy boats that go out? Not with a lion, but I totally believe there are. I was, however, constantly thinking, like, who is going to clean this darn boat? That's all I could think.
Oh,
first, who decorated
God.
It? Oh. I wanted to know who decorated it because it was so pretty. With all the little twinkle lights and like the little trees inside. I was like, this would be a great boat to go on for like your senior prom. But I hope anymore. They didn't rent that out the next day, because they need to swab the decks.
Yeah, like what if you were just taking the ferry like the next day? You were like, oh, that's sticky. Like, oh, you know? That would be just disgusting. That, oh my God. Ugh.
How did you feel about it?
You know, I worry about stuff like this, especially with some of my favorite shows, Game of Thrones being number one. They have, as of late, they haven't used sex as much, but in the first three, four seasons, it was well overused, and it never really benefited the story. Item number one, it was the girl on girl when Littlefinger is just talking, and it keeps...
It's like a Littlefinger monologue, and just we have this B-roll going on of these girls.
And
it
was like, okay,
that was gratuitous.
You know, and like... And then the same thing with Westworld. Like, okay, they have the big orgy in Westworld, but for what? Like, just because? It was gratuitous. And trust me, I don't mind seeing sex. I'm zero prude, but I don't want it to be there just for the sake of being there. And this, I think, is when the leftovers, and I hate to sound like a fanboy, but this is when it does everything better than anybody else.
Okay.
Like, you remember how we had the conversation? Well, we had the conversation last season about the rape scene with Meg and Tommy.
Yes.
And we were like, okay, rape has been way overused, especially in shows like Outlander or Game of Thrones or whatever. Like, it's been overused.
Yeah, it's almost like because you see it so much on TV, we worry that people can be desensitized.
But when they showed the rape happen with Meg and Tommy, it flipped it on its lid and reversed the roles, and I think the term tasteful is probably a little absurd, but it did it in the most tasteful way that it could to portray rape. And this, to me...
I would not use that word tasteful.
Well,
retract that statement.
Okay, I will retract that then. It did it in the most economical. How's that sound?
No.
No, what?
Okay. In a horrifying way, so that you felt it. You felt totally horrified watching it. I mean...
Right, okay. All right. It was part of the story. That's what I'm getting at. There was a reason for it being there. It wasn't just the person's getting raped for the sake of being raped. This, to me, felt like it was part of the story, and it was part of Matt's descent into where he had to go to discover where he ended up being. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have said Sodom and Gomorrah. I mean, okay, fine, sure. You want to compare it to Sodom and Gomorrah.
What is that? I forgot.
Oh, my God. The Sodomites, and they felt that the people in the Bible. This is what? Like Old Testament stuff.
Okay.
They were like crazy sex fiends.
My mom probably skipped people. This chapter of the Bible with me.
And the city was ruined. And
who is Gomorrah?
Oh my! Let's just move past.
Were they into the orgy, or did they stop it?
Let's move past it.
Okay. Well, I'm just trying to figure out. There's a lot of biblical references in the leftovers. Does this matter?
What I'm getting at, in my opinion, it doesn't necessarily matter. What matters is Matt's journey through it, and it was necessary for Matt's journey. Because he had to be, and you, the viewer, have to be put through the absurdity of the whole journey. Kind of like how we talked about the absurdity of Kevin Sr.'s journey.
Yes.
This one, too, is also absurd.
Totally.
And it tests him as a person. It tests his faith. It tests everything. Like, he's going to get handled here. Yes. by an object. Yes. And they're like, we're gonna take your seed, bro.
You know what was really interesting was that he was in all of this, and yet Michael, John, and Lori were just chilling out in their own little corner. Mm-hmm. Michael was doing a crossword puzzle. They were all just thinking it was hysterical / this is every day. Mm-hmm. Like, I loved how Lori was like, we're just gonna be at the bar, and it's like, Lori, do you know what's happened on that bar? You want to find Clorox wipes, okay? That's where you need to be. The cleaning closet.
You just need straight cans of bleach.
That's it.
Thank you
so
very much.
I just found it really interesting that these other three people are in the same exact boat, are probably seeing the same exact things. And poor Matt. Poor Matt, he's just that unlucky friend that everything happens to. Mm-hmm. But he forces it himself. So, all right. So before we go into the, I feel like... The lion stuff.
The lion, by the way, is a real thing.
That
lion is a real lion. That actually happened, but the story about how he was really old and then he impregnated all these lionesses. By the way, again, talking about a 90-year-old getting pregnant.
Yes.
Okay, I'm just saying, Sarah. Okay,
yes, I'm
just
feeling.
Throwing that out there.
Yep.
Okay.
Father Abraham, the many sons.
And... What I really liked about it is that Matt, remember when they said you shouldn't say his name lest you become him after midnight?
Yes.
Matt became Frasier. He really did. And the reason why he did.
I didn't get that. What do you mean he became Frasier?
Well, I'll tell you why he became Frasier. And yes, literally he became Frasier, kind of, because they were going to, like I said, they had like the golden lion, which could be considered a golden calf. Just throwing that out there too.
That was in the Ten Commandments.
Yes.
I saw that movie.
And people worshiping Frasier as another god, as a deity, worshiping this golden calf. They're going to use this golden calf to extract Matt's seed. Yes, there's a literal translation there.
Okay.
But the figurative translation, or the transition to Frasier, is, do you remember when he's talking to David Burton, who's played by Bill Camp?
Yes.
As Matt is talking to David Burton.
When David Burton is in the wheelchair?
When he's in the wheelchair.
Okay.
As Matt gets angrier, the lion gets angrier. And it kind of takes Matt back a little bit. But then he gets empowered. And you heard it on what we played when Matt's saying, I did it for you! Mm-hmm. And the lion roars, and it didn't affect Matt whatsoever. And then when God, at the end of the episode, runs away, and Matt has kind of left his faith, like he realizes, oh my God, everything I've done for me. I haven't done for God. It's all kind of crap. It's all kind of bull. The lion kills God.
So you're saying...
Like how Matt kills his faith.
You're saying the lion is like a spirit animal.
Damn straight.
Okay.
Damn straight.
All right.
And I think that's what it was there for, in my opinion, like what the lion was there for. It was there to represent Matt's journey and it was there to represent what Matt ended up becoming, which is, in my opinion, faithless.
Let's get to the meat.
Okay.
Did Matt get cured?
I don't think it matters at this point.
Did Matt at the end have no faith, or was his faith restored?
No, I don't think it was restored at all, because I think what happened with Matt is he looked at Lori and he looked at the futility of everything that he has gone through, and he has put faith in God and realized what I've done is everything that I've done in the name of God, whether it was, you know, help the GR, mm-hmm. or go to Miracle and help my family, or I believe that Kevin is the Messiah. It's all, and he is vehemently passionate about his faith. And then when he sees God die, even though he kind of believed it a little bit, for a moment there he was like,
yeah, I mean, he let him out of his out of the ropes. He set him free.
But then you see him at the end of the episode. It's gray. The camera is straight on, and you see it's muted. It's no longer vibrant the way that Matt usually is. His face is just emotionless.
Yeah.
And what I see is zero passion. He even his job of finding Kevin. Mm-hmm. Remember when the cop says, "Unless you have pressing business in Melbourne."
Yeah.
And he's like, "No."
I think his faith is gone. That comment where he said he doesn't have any pressing matters.
Yeah, and because of that, because he doesn't have any pressing matters, that means his faith is now gone. Or he realized that his faith is absurd, just like the journey that he has been on.
So here's a quick fun question. Mm-hmm. David Burton, let's say he did fall. Let's say he did die. Let's say he really came back to life. No.
He did.
Well, we don't... Listen, honey. You don't need to believe everybody.
No. Okay? If you remember, in season two, in Off-Ramp...
Oh, okay. Yes, you're right. You're right. Okay.
They said that David Burton...
Had died,
and they found him, and he came back.
But then he was also in the hotel, and he was on the bridge.
Right. And also, if you remember, the Pillar Man in episode one gave a letter
to Michael, David Burton.
Okay,
so for those of you who are lost...
Okay, go ahead.
David Burton, God in this episode, wearing the red hat. He showed up first, as you said, Dirty Santa was writing a letter to...
David Burton
in Melbourne, Australia.
And he gave it to Michael to send off.
Yes.
Okay.
Then we have when Kevin goes to the hotel, or was it on the bridge? I don't know if the hotel or the bridge.
Well, before the hotel, there was a story that was on the news as Meg was speaking. In the background, the story in Off-Ramp, mm-hmm. was that this guy, David Burton, had died and come back. And then we can get to the hotel part.
Okay. Oh, then the hotel, when Kevin did karaoke, you know what I'm talking about. The MC was David Burton saying you have to sing.
Right.
And then when they were on the bridge and Kevin had the little girl... David Burton was there with the rope around his neck, saying you either have to cross or jump.
Right, and he whispered something to Kevin, an international assassin, and we still don't know what it was that he whispered, but that's what made Kevin keep going.
Yes,
not jump.
So lots of David Burton. David Burton has been around the town. So let's say he did die. He did come back, mm-hmm. 3 years ago, which lines up with the same timetable as Kevin. And they've already met.
When Kevin took the poison.
Yes.
Okay. In that, I forget what episode it was. Oh, I forget.
But nonetheless, it goes to show you that magical things can also happen in Melbourne or in Perth. In Australia, it's not just Miracle that miracles can happen in. And I'm wondering, does David Burton come alive after he's chewed up by the lion?
Ooh, that's a good question. That would be something that would prove that the guy is obviously special. But Kevin is special in the same way. They both meet in the hotel. Kevin dies and does come back.
That's why I'm wondering if he's... I mean, maybe David Burton's done, but if David Burton truly had the same powers as Kevin, he needs to come back from this lion attack. That's all I'm saying.
And it's funny because a lot of people have been saying, especially Kevin himself, I'm not Jesus. I am not God. But if you look at it, it's quite possible that he could be, because David Burton is looking at it like, dude, I died and I came back. I am God. It would be reasonable for him to assume that he is. We, as the viewers, just don't believe it because we've been trained by Kevin to say, nope, something else is happening here.
You know what I hated? How he took credit for everyone disappearing.
Why did you hate that? Like, why did you hate, like, the absurd stories of, like, nope, Jesus had a twin, and that's why everyone got confused.
Nope.
And, sorry, it's kind of a lot
to
ask. The
departure is what pushed me over the edge, and I really wanted Matt to throw him in the cage with the lion. Because if that was true, you need to go away. That was not nice. Just because you can do it is not a good reason. Mm-hmm. And now, or you're lying, and that's not nice either. So I'm glad he got eaten by the lion. That's what I wanted to happen to him when he said he caused the departure. I'm not a nice person right now for saying that, and I don't take it back. David Burton should have been eaten by the lion, and I'm glad he was.
You know, and Damon has always said that, you know, 2% of the leftovers is supernatural. So there's room for 2% of this story.
How do you say that word? Room?
Room.
Room.
Not room. Room.
There's two O's. Room.
Room. Fine. You know what? There you go. Okay. Are you happy? There's room for 2% of this story to be supernatural. So it would... Are you willing to accept the fact that there is a supernaturality...
Yes.
...to David Burton?
Yes.
And that there is a possibility he may, in fact, be God.
No.
Because remember, we had that conversation during the Kevin Sr. episode. What is God? Who is God? What is the point of God? And if David Burton is God, God is just this person that is there watching things. And he just does things because he just feels like it. And if that's the case, and if Matt were to believe him... You know, Matt believed that there is a purpose to all of this. Mm-hmm. And if God's just sitting back drinking beers like me right now.
Sitting on a ferry. And why is he friends with the captain? That captain should choose better friends.
Actually, reading a book by Louis L'Amour called Lonely on the Mountain.
What is that about?
It tells the story of the Sackett brothers, and the rare letters tell Sackett received always had trouble inside. And the terse note from his cousin Logan is no exception. Logan faces starvation or a hanging if William Tell, can't drive a herd of cattle from Kansas to British Columbia before winter.
I don't understand any of this.
I know. To get to Logan, he must brave prairie fires, buffalo stampedes, and Sioux war parties. But worse trouble waits, for a mysterious enemy shadows Sackett's every move across the Dakotas and the Canadian Rockies, Tell Sackett. Has never been abandoned another Sackett in need. He will bring aid to Logan or die trying.
I don't think there's anything deep about that book, so I'm just going to skip
it. Well, at least the title would suggest that David Burton, a.k.a. God, is lonely on the mountain. And that's why he's down in Earth. He is lonely up there, and he's down here
he's
now,
just
and he's just watching things. And he's making the departure happen because...
Because why not?
Because he could.
No.
Because what the hell, right?
He didn't think he was God before he died, and the departure happened 7 years ago, okay? You just thought you were some bro.
Yes, no, I agree, but I'm
so
just saying...
he didn't make the departure happen. He is not God, and I am not taking that stance.
But maybe he has that revelation that he is God, and it's kind of like the Matrix. It gets downloaded.
No, he's not Kevin in Home Alone. I wish 2% of the world would disappear, and then he wakes up in the ER. No, you're not Kevin McAllister. You're just some guy that just got
Olympic
medal.
let's be honest here. The captain did say that David Burton was not his friend. He did say he's not my friend, but he is kind of famous. Okay. So, you know.
And he was also like, don't mess with him.
Yeah, because, you know, he's God. And I like when the guy showed up and when Matt's in the bathroom after the blood.
Yes.
He's like, so God punched you in the face, huh?
And I thought that was like an Australian saying that anytime anyone has a bloody nose, they must say like, oh, God punched you in the face. It's like when, you know, when you have like an itch on your nose, someone says, oh, someone must be talking about you.
Yes, yes.
I thought that was like the Australian thing for bloody nose.
But
it's not.
But instead of itch, it's a punch.
God punched you in the nose. Oh my gosh.
Oh my God. Yeah, another thing. Matt is dying. it has been confirmed.
Yes.
Matt has his cancer back.
Well, he's dying. He's saying what it is, but he is dying.
Yeah, and we can assume that it's the leukemia that he had as a boy. It has now come back. And he even asks David Burton in the conversation, then why is this why you're killing me? And David Burton neither says yes nor no. He gives a slight like nod.
Like a
barely noticeable nod. So Matt, as we had asserted and had our theory, which, by the way, you did call, so I'm going to have to say this.
Bam! Just like that. A winner!
He is, in fact, dying. So great job, Mike.
Probably shouldn't have, like, cheered myself for that. I was like, a winner, and I was like, yeah, oh, it's a bad thing.
Oh, that's really bad, though.
So, oops. Oh, well.
So let's talk about the conversation between, because, or...
I feel like it's done. The conversation is done. Matt delved in, bore his heart out. The guy was like, you've done it all for you. I am God. Let me go. I'm going to snap my fingers and off you go. I was so nervous that David was going to grab, see, I'm not calling him God because I don't think he is.
Okay.
That he was going to grab the axe and behead Matt and feed him to the lion. I knew the lion was going to eat somebody. I just didn't know who. I thought.
That's Chekhov's gun right there. You don't introduce a lion in the beginning part of your episode and then not use it.
Let him eat something. Yeah, I thought that Matt might chop him up into little bitty pieces and then he let him go. And I was like, man, David Burton's strong. Don't let him walk behind you. There's an axe there. So I was nervous about that.
Right. And I love that moment, that sudden moment. You could see it on Christopher Eccleston's face.
Matt's face. Let's call them by their character names.
You can see it on Matt's face. And Eccleston, who plays Matt, is like a master at these facial expressions. Like from day one, Matt is a character that can easily be read because he is so vibrant and he is so passionate and he is so enthralled by the things that motivate him. But you have that one moment where he realizes, maybe this is God. And he has now a moment to ask God, at least who he thinks is God, anything. It could be anything. And he asks about himself. He asks, is this why you're killing me? And it then again shows that Matt, yes, he is a faithful man. And yes, he has gone to extreme lengths to get his hotel. Remember, he beat a guy to death nearly, you know, and he goes through the tunnel of crap and stuff in no room at the inn.
I forgot about that.
His wife and he keeps his wife prisoner in Jardin the whole time until she finally leaves. And even John mentions this. Mm-hmm. Maybe if you just listened to her, she wouldn't have left, and you didn't treat her like a caged animal, she would have left. So Matt is capable of doing a lot of things, and he needs vindication from God. And God gives him no such thing. In fact, God snaps his fingers.
David Burton, not calling him God.
Well, I'm just talking in terms of Matt right now. From Matt's perspective, this is potentially God. And he has that moment on his face like, oh my God. Like literally, like I am speaking to God. And
yeah, it was that split second where he was like, shame on you, David Burton, you little fibber. Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, God. I didn't mean it. I'm going to get down my knees. I'm going to do whatever you want.
And what shakes him is the sudden departure thing. It's like, I did it because I could. And then he starts falling into this trap.
Because that was like the best reasoning that we've ever heard.
Yeah, because...
to be honest, why would the departure happen? Just because some godlike figure could.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh,
why not?
Okay.
And that shows the meaninglessness of God's acts and the... how random it can be and how uncalculated it can be.
You stop referring to David as God.
So, but I'm okay. Yes. David is saying that it's potential that there is just complete randomness to everything in life. And God, who's potentially David or vice versa, just sits back and watches. And when Matt hears this, that's when his life and the things he seeks vindication for have now been rendered meaningless. And that's the scary part for Matt. And that is also why I feel like this episode, although a little bit of a deflation from the momentum that we had from the previous episode, is necessary, because it now completes Matt's character arc. Matt went from a person who at the departure was afraid and lost, and someone who was blaming everybody else and trying to poke holes into why this wasn't the rapture, yet he finds his faith. And then in the second season, he puts his faith in Miracle, and his faith is rewarded.
Miracle.
I was just waiting. He puts his faith in Miracle. This is the height of what Matt is capable of doing. He has garnered a flock. He has people that love him, and he has people that follow every single word. This is Matt at the height of his powers. And the final part of it in this episode is Matt losing his faith and losing the idea that maybe David Burton isn't necessarily God. Well, let's just go there. But he now knows the absurdity of what he has done, and he now knows the absurdity of God. It now opens his eyes to the idea that all of this is just kind of random.
The show, man, it plays with your mind so freaking much. But you know who I loved in this episode so much? Lori. I was on the Lori train. The Lori train of, like, I'm just going to throw it out there. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm here. I'm here for the ride. Let's go save Kevin. By the way, how do all these people have so much money that they can buy last-minute tickets to Australia? Oh, they didn't. They went on a chartered plane. Never mind. I take that back.
Well, no. They went on went on the plane, but they paid $20,000.
Oh, yeah.
Matt, paid $20,000.
To
his buddy.
Yes.
Who was caring for not Matt's mother, but his buddy's mother.
Matt's had $20,000 since season one.
So, again, this number, $20,000, keeps coming back up. It's another connection here, which is really cool.
So Lori just lays it down. You know, this is my ex-husband. I know all sorts of things about him, including that one of his tattoos is misspelled. And I wonder if Justin's actual tattoo is misspelled.
That would be really cool.
That would
if
be
it
really
were.
Fun. And she's just there. And I love how cool John is. Like, John's like, sure, you can come on this mission to, like, save your ex-husband, even though I believe he's Jesus and you've been having secret conversations with him about my dead daughter. And they still are smiling. They're still cool hanging out at the bar. Mm-hmm. They're still all cuddly. What an interesting relationship. I go back and forth where I'm like, man, are Lori and John relationship goals, hashtag relationship goals? Like, you know, we can just get through anything. Kind of like how Nora and Kevin were.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that they have a lot of the same faults that Nora and Kevin did. They're not being honest. They've been hiding things from each other.
Well, but John even says, though, like, I would have hid that from me, too.
Yeah. But John didn't tell Lori about the book.
No, he didn't. You're right. That's true. So I will give you that.
But I like that they've come to peace with it, how it's just kind of like, oh, maybe she'll be an apostle too. We're going to hang out. We got to see in the preview that she pretty much says, like, I'm on board. We're going to try this out.
You can't go into spoilers. Previews are spoilers, and some people don't want to hear that.
Sorry.
So,
well, whatever. I don't know what she's talking about. She might be saying she's on board to eat mac and cheese. we'll just say that. She likes mac and cheese.
Why not?
So,
is it the elbow kind or the shell kind?
Shell.
Is it Velveeta or is it Kraft?
Neither. It's Annie's.
I'm a Velveeta guy. I love the thick cheese.
Oh, I hate that. Anyway, so I was a big fan of Lori. Just loved how she, Michael, and John were just so chill in this episode. I love that nobody's answering their phones. I don't know if that's because the phones are kind of down because of everything that's been going on. This boat was a wild trip, man.
And I like the fact that Lori is there to propose to Matt that Kevin is having a psychotic break. And guess what? You're following a guy that's having a psychotic break. And what does that mean about you? That potentially means you are freaking delusional as hell, just as much as he is. And this episode teeters back and forth, again, on faith versus logic.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what Lori is there for. And that is what she succeeds at extraordinarily well. And that is why, in the end, when I look at this episode, and I can see why people get frustrated by it. I can see why people are like, bro, what are we doing with sex potties and a whole episode dedicated to Matt and, you know, seeing lions and God? And it matters because it's talking about what is faith and what is sad delusion.
You can't, so much about this show is faith and what people do based upon faith. And you can't have a season, a series finale season, without an episode dedicated to someone whose faith is completely broken, I think. So is Matt my favorite character? No.
No, he's not.
I don't love him out of everybody.
But this is why I think it worked better than the Kevin Sr. episode.
Yes.
Because I at least have more
investment.
I have more investment and I have more attachment to Matt than I did
more
Kevin
history.
Sr. More history.
There you go.
I've seen his journey. I've seen him go from one way. I've seen him begin one way and end an entirely different way.
Yep.
And knowing that he has this mission of trying to find Kevin and bring him back to Jardin. I mean, the idea of Matt getting to Australia and then bringing him back to Jardin, Kevin, that is,
miracle.
before, you notice how I've been saying Jardin so you wouldn't sing the miracle theme song. It is in and of itself just as absurd as a lion sex cult.
It is. It's a crazy notion, and yet these peeps are on board, and they're somehow going to find Kevin, hopefully, with no cell phone.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
let's get to your sudden theory of the week.
No. What? Actually, I also wanted to talk about the opening. What did you think about the opening and naked yoga?
Oh.
And
toe strength.
And toe strength and things going flopping like Kevin Garvey. Like,
you know, I'll tell you this. I was really glad he was not flopping like Kevin Garvey, first off. No.
Oh.
I was just glad it wasn't a female.
Yes.
For any females who have streaked in their youth, there's extra flopping because there's two flops. So...
Mary did. Okay, for those of you who are wondering, yes, Mary did streak in college.
It's like a passage that you do at URI. You streak the quad. Nonetheless, that's what I was thinking in that scene. I wasn't actually looking at anything nude about this man. I was just like, wow, I'm glad they have a female. I mean, they don't have a female character because this would be really awkward. You know, I didn't even care that he was naked. I don't know why he was naked. I was like, is there something with like clothes? At first, I thought he was going to take the other guy's clothes, and that's why he was naked. I don't know why he had to be naked, aside from the fact that clothing would prohibit his flexibility.
Oh, that's a good one.
Because think about it, like your suits and stuff, like your really kind of tailored stuff. Mm-hmm. If you're really trying to do a nice like stretch, I'm trying to do it right now. If you're doing a little split, you get that tension in your crotch.
And even in your shirt too, like you have something. Yeah, okay.
So he was reaching. And I think he didn't have LuLaRoe. He didn't have like flexible yoga pants. Okay, he was on his submarine, so he had to get down to the bare bones so he could be Mr. Flexible, and I have really strong toes. I like to do tricks with my toes sometimes, pick things up from the floor, like popcorn that I drop.
Or binkies,
yep. So from one strong-toed person to another, I was like, way to go, man, way to go. I liked it. I really didn't care that he was naked, I think he needed to be naked.
Right.
I really do. I think had he been in his uniform, it would have prohibited. He would have gotten so far. It would have been an absolute fail. It would be like 90%.
No, it would be like 98%.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be able to grab with his big toe.
No.
He could get his fingers, but not the big toe.
There you go. So that's why, in my opinion, that is why he had to be in the buff.
So ultimately, I really appreciate this episode, even though I give it a 4.4. I do appreciate what it's trying to do. It is trying to tell you faith versus logic, and it is trying to tell you you can put your faith in things. It just depends on what your faith is and what the end game is. If you really believe that, you know, one thing is going to happen, guess what? Just because you believe it, it may not happen. It may not. And your faith may be just as meaningless as everything else. And what does this do to Matt the character? What does this do to
What does it do to me?
Right. What does this do to him going forward and how he approaches Kevin and how he approaches his life? And granted, he's probably not going to have much more life after this anyway.
Well, let's...
Well, no. And the reason why I'm bringing all this up again is because as I was thinking about this, I was reminded of the question that I posed to Damon and Tom during our interview with them in just recently, in I think it was episode 40, where I asked them, do you consider yourself a man of faith or science? And Damon, in the middle of my question, and Tom both started laughing.
Mm-hmm.
And I have the sound here. I'll play it. Do you guys consider yourselves men of science or men of faith? And which do you think is most prevalent in The Leftovers?
Yeah, I feel like the most honest answer to your question is I am a man of science, but I feel much better when I'm a man of faith. And so I'm constantly trying to move towards that pole. But the gravity of science is much more powerful to me than the gravity of faith. That said, science kind of bums me out. and I'm much more, if you basically like look at the world through the lens of, oh my God, everything is going to shit. That's not really a good way to lead your life, but the science does seem to support that more than everything's going to be okay. I want to spend more time and everything's going to be okay. And I don't think it's necessarily about faith in a deity, or a religious system. It's more sort of magical thinking. I mean, I guess I would say to you, you know, I'm a sports fan as well. And I'm a New York Jets fan. Uh-huh. And so I have, and I know that I'm not alone in this. I will actually sometimes feel like when I'm watching a Jets game that if I turn off the television or switch channels that the Jets will do better. And the narcissism and ego involved in that thinking that I have some impact in my living room over how the Jets are going to fare is so ridiculously shameful. But I do it anyway. I still do it. And that seems, I don't have the power to not do it, even though I know scientifically that turning off the television has no consequence whatsoever in the outcome of the game. But it makes me feel better to not be watching, which tells me that I am trying to basically move into that faith category where I can sort of will/pray the Jets into a, Just get to the playoffs, guys. Like, you can be the wild card I will settle for at this point.
So, first of all, Damon, if you're listening, what I didn't say to you at the time was, you're a Jets fan. And like our listener before him was a Falcons fan, for him, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that you're a Jets fan.
I just want to sing West Side Story. When you're a Jet, you're a Jet.
But when I hear this, and I think he was tipping his hand a little bit about Matt and about what this season was going to be about. It's absurd that he turns his TV off, just like me. I admitted in that interview, I turned the TV off in the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I shaved my beard in the middle of halftime. I changed my jersey because I thought, I'm going to change the outcome. And the narcissism involved in that.
That you could change the Super Bowl. You, this faith, guy in Rhode Island.
Right, the faith that it takes to do that. It's absurd. It's shameful, like Damon said. And look at Matt. He thinks he is changing the outcome of things that are happening. Like, he thinks, I have the ability to make things happen. I'm doing all of this for God. I'm changing the channel in service of the Patriots.
Yes.
Damon changes the TV in service of the Jets.
I move to Miracle and I bring my wife there because I'm doing something.
And we don't know. We don't know. It's totally 100% absurd. Yet we still do it. We still look at it like, I can have an effect. And that is what I think is happening to Matt now. He sees the absurdity in changing the channel.
Yeah.
So and he sees the absurdity in his faith in what is meaninglessness and what is meaningful. Mm-hmm. And I think that is what ultimately it's all about. And Damon is the one who tipped his hat.
Oh.
So let's get to the listener feedback. What do you think about
Your sudden theory of the week?
Well, now that comes at the end of the show.
Oh, so well, you had it in the Google Notes.
I know. Okay, ready? Here. Okay, that's for me.
Okay.
I messed that up.
Okay, listener feedback.
Hold on.
Oh. You didn't have music in the notes either, Blake. I follow the notes to a T, in case you didn't know this about me.
All right, now you can get into it.
Clint Church gave it 5 Damons. Stunning and brilliant. This episode deals with theodicy? Theodicy? I don't know how to say it.
Sure.
Sure, there we go. The question of why a good God would allow suffering, which has been Matt's question all along. Mm. And I think it's many people's question. Matt finally gets what he's wanted for so long, a conversation with God. He gets to ask God why, but God turns the question back on Matt. Why did you abandon your family? What did you do to sacrifice your happiness for others? Why does there have to be a reason for everything? Have Matt's labors been self-righteous all along? When he prayed to God as a boy, did God save him? Did David Burton save him again with a snap? Matt tells Lori he is dying even after his talk with God. He has lost his faith in God after his conversation. That's the guy I was telling you about, he said. Well, I think this statement extends beyond the guy who threw a man overboard. This is the guy Matt's been preaching about all his life. This is the sum of his life's work. That was the God he's been telling everyone about. And now that God is dead.
I really like that ending, too. When God is dead, God in quotes, you know, David Burton. Matt turns around and says, this is the guy I was telling you about. Like this whole entire time.
Yes.
This was the guy I was telling you about this whole time, not just on the boat, but his entire life. And look how absurd this is. The guy dies because he's eaten by a descendant of a sex kitten, Frasier. like how absurd, right?
Yes, it is absurd.
Greg Cuoco on Facebook says 4.85 Damons.
Look at that exact number.
I know. He's even more exact than I am. Truly a masterpiece, this episode explores the faith of Matt and through its crazy religious metaphors really ends up with Matt as Job actually getting to ask God why Matt has sacrificed everything for him and he is still being punished.
I am so bad about knowing my Bible.
You went to Bible camp. How do you not know this? You literally went to Bible camp.
I remember the songs.
Oh my God. Our God is an awesome God.
He reigns from heaven over with wisdom. Yeah, I got it.
What we find out is that God is fairly indifferent and does things just because I can. After all, God is the authority, and although Matt thinks he is watching, judging, he actually is not. God retorts, you have not done anything for me. You did everything for yourself.
Yeah, we keep calling him God. He's not God, I think. I think he's just David Burton.
Like with Job, no explanation. God does not need to explain why he caused the sudden departure or anything else for that matter. In the end, Matt finds true peace within himself. Even if this is not really God, when he refers to, that's the guy I was telling you about, I think he was talking about God, capital G.
Okay.
Who he has been preaching about his whole life. And, you know, just as a personal note,
uh-huh.
I've always had trouble with faith. I've always had trouble with, and I suppose this is my story and how I relate to this episode. We didn't do that at the beginning of the episode.
You need to have the little Max Richter music underneath.
Oh, crap. I don't have it. Well, whatever. Don't worry about it. I've always had trouble with my faith. I've always had trouble with God. I've always had trouble with religion as it's been proposed to us. It was exacerbated by the fact that I went to Catholic school. And when I asked the teacher a lot of the times, or at you know CCD or whatever, I would say, "Why does God permit people to suffer? Why does God do X, Y, and Z? Why did God bring down the walls of Babylon? Why did all this stuff happen? Why did the Holocaust happen?" And I always got the same answer. And I didn't like the answer. I always thought it was a cop-out, which was, God doesn't need a reason.
Oh.
And I always felt that was a catch-all. That was like, that was somebody who couldn't explain away why certain things happened. And the answer that they could find was, I don't have to give it to you because God doesn't need it. God's superior. God has this. God has that. God can do anything he wants because he just freaking wants to. And that, to me, is full of it.
That's what David Burton said.
And that, to me, if I can get it.
David Burton should have been a CCD teacher.
But David Burton at least gave you a reason. He said, because I could. That, to me, makes sense. But God saying, I don't need a reason, that just, oh, my God, it gets me so freaking mad. I
can tell. How about I read the next one? Louisville
yes,
Dad tweeted that he gave this episode 3.5 Damons, elaborate setup for a minimal yield. Interesting, but underwhelming. And Santiago Villaba said the ACN reference plus that ending, 1,000 Damons.
ACN,
what is ACN?
ACN, for all of those who were wondering, was the network that they were showing the explosion and the missile rise
yes.
in the background.
Yes.
And ACN is the company that was part of the show The Newsroom with Jeff Daniels.
Okay.
I was on HBO, and that was the network that was on there. So it's a cool inside HBO joke for those who watched The Newsroom.
Okay. Sarah Doss said, I think that's God. Everyone has tried to reason with Matt and get him to come back to reality. I mean, Mary and his child left him. They didn't do it. I mean, Lori is pretty good at convincing people, and she couldn't even get through to him. It took that whole situation with the supposed God to help him come to terms with what's happening to him. Victoria McGarrell gave it 5 Damons. I think this was my favorite of the season so far, says Victoria. Especially love the Garden of Eden turned purgatory imagery. Reviewing Matt's personal hell. And depending on how you interpreted the lion killing God or Satan, Matt was either liberated from his faith or it was emboldened. Either way, he's about to get crazier. The most interesting thing for Victoria was to watch this season how much more insane Matt seems than Kevin. Matt being someone extremely faithful to his religion to the point that he's nuts, compared to Kevin, who's probably, let's be real, clinically insane, ultimately acts more level-headed about the world they are living
in. But is Kevin really insane? Is he really insane? Because we see David Burton. David Burton is a real person. David Burton was in the hotel. That was not just a manifestation of Kevin's psyche. Although, if you really wanted to go like grassy knoll over here.
Give it to me.
Okay, if you really wanted to go grassy knoll, Kevin may have seen the news report. Actually, he did see the news report about David Burton. And maybe there was a picture of David Burton in the news report. And then maybe his psyche translated that picture. His subconscious took that picture, put it on David Burton, on the character's face. And then we have David Burton, the character who is now God.
Listen,
that's all grassy knoll, though.
I'm not feeling the God thing. I'm feeling that David Burton might have the same special powers as Kevin. I don't think either of them are God.
I don't think either of them are crazy either. I think this confirms the fact that Kevin is not crazy. That the hotel did exist. It happened. And David Burton, who we are seeing in front of our face, was there.
Justine Coe says, besides feeling very dirty and greasy after that cruise, boy, I don't know who to trust. Kind of buying into this madness and not trusting Lori.
Ooh, do you trust Lori about all this? Do you feel like she's leading Matt down the wrong path?
I'm cool with Lori. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that Lori's there. You know, she's pretty chill. She's pretty even-headed. Knows to hang out at the bar on the boat and is keeping Matt a little bit in line.
When Matt gave out the beans about Evie.
Oh, my God.
I was like, oh, my God. And that's how you knew the episode was good. Because you're sitting there like, what the hell is John going to do? And even Matt talking about Lori's whistle. Remember, she was blowing the whistle at him in season one. And
when she was a member of the Guilty Remnant.
They were both getting, like, seeing Matt and Lori play off of each other. Like, they don't have a lot of scenes together in any of the episodes of The Leftovers. And now we finally have Amy Brenneman and Christopher Eccleston going at each other. And they were just, when she was talking about Nora, she's like, you have a sister that's there. You haven't even checked on her, have you? It just shows you, again, how intense Matt is. But the two of them, when she says, yeah, and Kevin shits 4 times a day. Like, just again, proving that
he's
not. Watch
your language. We're on Facebook Live.
I'm quoting. I'm quoting. I'm not saying it myself. I can't get in trouble for quoting. It just shows, again, that they are great. And I was just, oh man, I was so pleased. From Missy, she says, we've had three different Matt episodes, but they're all similar because they all deal with Matt's faith. In season one's Two Boats and a Helicopter, he tries to save his church. In season two, No Room at the End, he tries to get Mary back into Miracle. And now season three, he tries to get Australia to every time he tries to get Australia to get to Australia to bring Kevin home to prevent the apocalypse. There are always things slash people trying to stop him from succeeding, and he always seems to find loopholes. This time he has accepted his fate. And I thought the opening sequence with the sonar pangs and the French dialogue from the ship was really intense and eerie. I would agree. It was very eerie. It reminded me a lot of the Desmond, yes, from Lost.
We have to go back, Kate.
Also, the explosion happened in the South Pacific, like possibly where the island was, too.
I know. I couldn't handle it.
In Lost?
I just can't.
We have to go back, Kate.
Mind blown, Missy. Great job. And finally, I really love this David Byrd character. I always have. He has been introduced to us here and there throughout the seasons, and I knew he would be significant. I feel like David Burton was actually Dean, or he sent Dean to Kevin. I feel like he also could have been the Patty that Kevin saw, or at least Burton made him see. He's been alongside Kevin ever since the departure. He's either the devil or he really is their modern age god. I think the voices that Kevin Sr. hears are sent from Burton.
Ew.
In the episode I Live Here Now, Burton tells Kevin that he needs to be more original. He says, everyone always tells him that they want to go back. And on the bridge, he tells him this is more real than it's ever been. Mm-hmm. The last time we saw Burton, he was at the hotel and Kevin was, in quotations, dead. So now that we are seeing him again, is Matt dead too? And everyone else on that boat, are they all dead?
No.
Matt didn't believe him after he snapped his fingers, but he did at first. And I think Matt knows that Burton is evil. Also, I feel that Kevin is Jesus' twin. He may not be Jesus, but he is definitely his twin.
Hallelujah.
Yeah, you know, I'm just really good, Missy. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. You brought it on that one.
What is a tweet of the week?
We haven't had a tweet in the week in quite some time.
I'm so excited.
So I'm proud to present the tweet of the week. The tweet of the week is brought to you by Ty Avenger, and she says, not since the opening of Die Hard 2 have we seen the start of a show with naked yoga. Hashtag naked yoga, hashtag the leftovers.
Wow.
And, you know, just thank you, because you made a, first of all, you made a Die Hard 2 reference, and awesome. And of course, Die Hard, number one, being the greatest Christmas movie that's ever been made.
No, it's not.
Yeah, well, 100%. Okay. For those of you watching live right now, what is the greatest Christmas movie ever made? Because clearly it is Die Hard, okay? And for those of you listening to the podcast later on, please let us know in email or Facebook what you think. Smoggy Misunderstood Genius.
Yes.
What do you think is the greatest Christmas movie ever made?
Maybe a three-way tie between Elf,
No,
Love
you gotta make a choice. No,
Home Alone.
You gotta make a choice. Make a choice.
If it's the Elf.
Oh, no, not even close.
What's your favorite color?
Not even.
The four major food groups.
Not even
candy.
Close.
Candy corn. Candy canes. Syrup.
All right, you ready for my sudden theory of the week?
Just so you know, there's a Kevin in Home Alone.
Yes, there is.
Thank you, Missy.
You ready for the sudden theory?
Yes.
All right, let's do it. All right, do you have one?
Yes, we're going to see dogs. I'm still sticking to my dog. I'm still sticking to it. We're going to see a dog.
That is a massive cop-out.
No, it's not.
Oh, that's a total cop-out.
I totally disagree, and I hope that dogs play a major role, just to shove it.
For me, you know, I'm going to do a cop-out as well, because I've realized,
yeah,
now that we've had the lion sex cult,
yep,
I have zero freaking idea where this show is going. I have no idea. I can't even pretend to know. I can't. So what I'm going to say, my cop out,
yep.
Sun theory of the week,
bring it,
is that Matt is going to die. Matt is going to die. Because now that they've introduced it, it's going to happen.
No kidding. Of course. Great job. That's like a Mary set in theory of the
week. Yes, it is. Because if anybody, I don't care who you are, if anybody has the narcissism, other than the writers, to say, I know what's going to happen in The Leftovers season 3, I challenge you, really, to tell me where you think it's going
to
go.
I'd love to know as well.
I would love to know. Call us on the hotline, 503-454-6730. Let us know on Facebook. Tell us on an email. I don't care. But I challenge you, the listener.
No, but I actually don't want to know. I want to be enjoying it.
Well, you know what I mean.
Okay.
You know what I mean.
Let's close out the show.
Oh, sorry. Wrong one. Oh, crap. I played the wrong sound.
Please hang up and try again.
All right, final thoughts, my darling. What do you got?
3 episodes. The countdown.
Oh,
the final
man.
Countdown. It's coming, guys. It's coming for you quick.
Yes, it is. I think, you know.
Okay, so we're here. We're here, guys. We're all still here, okay? And you still are, too. Let's do this together. Let's bring it on down. Let's show our creators our love. Okay? Find these, like, little obscure people who are the writers and tweet them and tell them you love them. Tell them that you love this show.
I think for me, the final thought is I like the Nora episode, I was a little frustrated where it was going at first. But then I saw the purpose, and I understood where we're going. And my one criticism is that the show better get its act in gear. Like, we only have 3 episodes left.
Get its act in gear? Where have you been?
No. I'm not saying that it isn't in gear already, but I just don't want an episode like I want.
This kind of an episode will not be next week.
That's what I'm saying.
Next week is going to be, oh, man.
I want to make sure that every episode going forward carries the momentum down. Like, we are falling down the
I think we're going to see dead people.
Really?
Yeah. Sixth Sense. There's my sudden theory. I think we're going to see dead people.
What kind of dead people are we going to see?
I don't know. Like, I'd like a Meg. I've been wanting a Meg. I would love to see Evie again.
What if we see Patty again?
Yeah, I'd love to see Patty. I would just love to go back to the hotel and see all sorts of dead people.
I really want to go back to the hotel.
Let's do it. Let's kill Kevin Jr. again.
Kill him till he's dead.
No. He's going to come back.
And I would, oh man, seeing Meg would be fantastic. I would love for her to, I know we said this in like the first episode, I would just love for her to see him screw with Kevin, like bad, in the hotel. And I would love to see, although if they brought Patty back, I feel like that might be a little disingenuous, because they handled Patty.
Yeah, Patty's done. Let's get some Meg or Evie.
Oh, Meg would be great.
It would.
All right, you ready to close out the show?
Yes.
All right, let's do it.
So that just about does it, guys. We're social people. We want you to join in on this. So if you're listening to this in your podcast app, feel free to hang out with us on Facebook Live every Monday after the show at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can find us on Twitter. The handle is Living Reminders, and also on Facebook by just searching The Living Reminders or by using the handle.
Or if you want to send us a long message because you either love us or hate us, and I really want you to either hate us or love us, because that means we are eliciting a good emotion, send us an email at livingreminders@gmail.com.
That's right.
And if you think that we provide a good enough value for you in your Leftovers experience, or if you like the things that Mary and I do in Mary and Blake Media with all the shows and podcasts and blogs that we have, please visit patreon.com/tallmommedia. Again, that's patreon.com/tallmommedia. And consider donating a dollar or two or $120 billion. Or, hey, even in the leftovers mode, $20,000. You never know.
You never know.
We would appreciate it. It helps keep our production going. It helps keep our show going. It helps keeping everything that we do here going. And we would be honored.
Can you please say going one more
going,
time?
Going, 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 and gone. And we'd be...
There you go. I got you.
You see, you got me all messed up now. I was on a roll, and you messed with me.
Just stop going. I got you. All right.
We would be honored if you helped keep our production going. How's that sound?
Until next time, ladies and gents, I'm Mary Larson.
My name's Blake.
And we're still here.